This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now, Michael Shanduger from The Athletic. And I've not been there the last couple of days. I made it east here to Canton and now coming back. So what have I missed so far in the last couple of days as far as what's happened on the field?
We finally got in a Marlon Darbo sighting. That's been nice the past couple of days because, as you know, a lot of people want him to perform really well, you know, in his second year, he and David Moore. But you just kind of haven't seen much. I know some people have been impressed with David, but he's been hurt recently. I know I'd say the last three or four practices, Amara has looked pretty good. Mixed in there a little bit with that first unit of guys. So right now with Dugout, it looks like it's Tyler, Jerron, and then a mixture of either Brandon Marshall, Amara. I'm missing another guy. But yeah, Amara's looked really nice. Obviously, I've been paying a lot of attention to the receiver group, Marcus Johnson as well. And you missed a rarity, at least I feel like. Pete Carroll just trashed his rookie QB. That was pretty bad the other day. You missed that one.
Really? How did he phrase it?
It was strange, at least uncharacteristic, I thought. So I think, I forget who asked it. Someone said, "Hey Pete, what do you think of your backup QB competition?" Simple question. And then he says, "Yeah, Austin's looked solid." And then he's like, "Yeah, Alex has been, it's been struggling. It's been hard for him. You know, our offense is pretty high tech, and he's just having a problem getting back to where he was in mini camp. You know, he's been struggling, and it's been hard for him. You know, and you know, Pete, even if he doesn't think a guy's playing well, he'll at least like commend his work ethic or that he's learning or, you know, some random, you know, cliche to put a positive spin on it. But no, he was just like, yeah, Austin's good and Alex is not. And this has kind of moved on. I thought that was pretty strange. And also, we got the return of, Brandon Marshall came back, I think a couple days ago and had a nice little run in 11-on-11. We haven't seen much from him, and it looks like he's still a little bit limited, but it looked like a decent goal line threat. I think that was on, I can't remember which day, maybe Thursday. He had a pretty good day.
Yeah, that was encouraging because, again, you can see what his value is. I know I talked to him early in the week, and one of the things that he was talking about is, you know, he's really following the plans of the trainers, and they're trying to be very protective of the ankle and the toe and all that, and they're not trying to rush things, and he's using all the new things that they have as far as, you know, the different type of scientific things that have advanced. But, you know, you can see what he can do. I mean, he's a big guy who can catch, and that's one of the things that they need. And so I think he's now enhanced his chances to try to make this team where, you know, he brings up the empty tank. Well, I think there's still some gas in there.
Well, yeah, and the other thing is I think he'll be really good when the defensive backs get to go against him because he's really savvy and he has those little veteran tricks that you can kind of pick up on. Or even if he beats you on them and you go back in the film room and you say, okay, here, young bucks, see what Brandon did? That's a veteran move, such and such. So, like, see how he hit you with this move or such and such. You know, and Brandon's also pretty physical, so he can be real physical with them at the line or at the, you know, when the ball is in the air. It helps both sides of the ball. It helps them build a rapport with Russell, and it also helps, you know, the DBs learn. A lot of the DBs are pretty young. Obviously, Bradley McDougal's been in the league for a little bit, and obviously Byron's been around for a while, but for the most part, going against someone like Brandon is really valuable. It's almost in the same way as any young offensive lineman got to, you know, go against a Michael Bennett or a Cliff Avril every day. That was helpful because even if they were getting worked on the field, you know, you can go back in the film and say, here, look, this is what a lot of guys are going to do. This is how you stop that. And then let's correct it and get better. And that's what everyone's trying to do around here. So when Brandon gets back full, I think that'll help, you know, both sides of the ball. That'd be really big. Like you said, it increases the chances he's actually on the team in September.
Yeah, well, I guess one of the things we have to start studying now is, of course, you know, with the games coming up, is, you know, who's going to be on special teams to see, you know, of the receiving group, who's going to, if they're going to keep six or five, and knowing now that, you know, the new kickoff rule, you're not going to have any offensive or defensive lines out there, linemen out there. So, you know, is there going to be a receiver or two that you can see that might fit special teams' needs on kickoffs or punts and that can enhance his chances to expand the group of receivers to six?
See, that's where I think the young guys have the better shot. You know, that's why people ask me all the time, you know, is Brandon going to make the team? You would assume so, but then, yeah. like you said, with the new kickoff rules, you swap guys for, like, you know, instead of a, what was it, Brandon? You know, a Jordan Roos, right? Instead of a Jordan Roos or a Posick out there, then, yeah, you probably have a Juwan Brown or a Marcus Johnson or, you know, just a faster, more athletic player there. And, you know, is Brandon going to do that? You know, at his age, you know,
no,
I haven't
he will not be
that, but again, he's been limited, right? Yeah, he's not gonna do that, right? So you have to factor in that gives a better shot to Marcus Johnson, a Juwan Brown, who will probably make, you know, Amara Darbo, you know, a David Moore, a Keenan Reynolds. I think that gives them, you know, a leg up there, whereas where they lack in experience, they can just put him in more spots and save a roster spot there. And, you know, Pete's not just going to dismiss the special teams aspect of it as, you know, another just some random part of the game. It's important. It's valuable. And guys who are able to perform well, not just perform there, perform well there, yeah, are going to have a better shot. I think that's where you see, again, yeah, Amara, Juwan, Marcus. I would say Keenan. I would say those are the guys that I'm looking at now with a better shot to be out there with their special teams play.
Yeah. Now, the tomorrow is going to look like a workout day for some Seahawks to look at some veteran guys they might want to bring in. And I think it's no accident. It's linebacker / defensive end, three of those, and a cornerback. And so whether it's going to be Lamar Houston, whether it's going to be DeAndre Moore, who had been here before, you know, Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, I guess, could audition to see if he can compete for the backup slot job. Because I guess right now, Nico Thorpe is doing a pretty good job there. And so... you know, they'll be there along with Eric Walden, a linebacker who had been in a 3-4 defense.
Well, see, I thought the cornerback workout visit was kind of interesting because, like you said, Nico is pretty good there, at least to what I've seen. But also, Nico, because he can also play outside, is another guy, again, who just saves you a roster spot, right? So if you want to roll out your starting group of Shaquille and Byron, and then you throw Justin in there as your slot guy, if you want an outside backup guy, you know, for like Byron, then you can have Nico, and then he can also, if need be your backup to Justin, or even compete for the starting spot. So, you know, Pete loves to save the roster spot there. You know, all GMs do, really. But you buy two positions with one in Nico. Obviously, competition is what they want to do around this time of year. But seeing that was pretty interesting because their safety group or the DB group isn't that banged up, you know, compared to like their pass rushers. Seemingly are, you know, just dropping every day. You know, the other day, Tom Johnson didn't practice, neither did Marcus Smith, neither did, you know, Deion Jordan hasn't practiced. So that bringing in pass rushers will never surprise me, but the DB group seems like it's pretty set across that starting group, and even then the backups seem pretty competitive too.
Is two on defense, if two guys kind of stepped up, maybe exceeded what the expectations were, and maybe not get for playing time, but at least put themselves in a position. Like Shaquem Griffin continues to do good things, and it looks like Trey Flowers is really starting to get it.
Yeah, Shaquem's interesting because you see him on the field, right? And you see him making plays, and like, oh, wow, he'll play a lot. And then you remember, oh, wait, he's backing up KJ Wright, who's going to play a lot of snaps and for the most part has been pretty durable over the course of his career. And so you figure if KJ's healthy, that doesn't leave a ton of opportunity for Shaquem, at least in terms of defensive snaps, right? So, you know, he'll obviously be a special teams guy. And so far, Fitzgerald hasn't indicated that Shaquem will be like a pass rushing linebacker, like a Barcavius or a rookie Jacob Martin. So for now, just playing behind the line of scrimmage. And there's just not a lot of starting snaps available there. Shaquem has been thrown out there a little bit in camp, but it's just one of those things where you don't imagine he unseats the starter in this case, which is KJ. But at the same time, you'll watch him like, oh, he's stripping the ball. He's breaking passes up. He's intercepted Russell already. I mean, I think today's like day 8. You know, he's done all that in 8 days of work. So I'm really watching how they find a way to use him, mostly in games, because, you know, KJ's pretty good, obviously. So, but Shaquem is becoming one of those guys that's going to be hard to keep him off the field, kind of like how Bradley McDougal was last year, even though when Cam and Earl were healthy, McDougal found a way to get on the field.
What does it look like as far as, with C.J. Procise being healthy and being real talented? I mean, does it look like – it's kind of sort out running back positions 3, 4, and 5, and how many more – how many guys do you think they'll keep?
So yesterday was interesting because we got a good look at kind of like the goal line depth chart. So when they got on the goal line and they were trying to hammer it in, it was Chris Carson, Rashad Penny, and then Mike Davis. Actually, was who they were trying to hammer it in there with, despite, you know, CJ being more of a bigger back, right? But in terms of just, like, if it's first and 10 from, you know, your own 35, it's still tough to get a read there. You figure CJ has the advantage, not just because he's been here a little bit, but he's just so versatile. You're seeing the running backs line up against linebackers, safeties, corners, and, you know, CJ's big, strong, and fast, and you can put him in there on any down and be effective, right? When I look at Chris Carson, I just see almost like a little bit better, faster version of CJ, right? But that's not to say CJ isn't pretty good. So when I think of the number three guy, that's who I go to actually first. And then after that, JD's got the same advantages there. He's not as big, but he's super fast, and he has those mismatch problems, right? You put JD in there on third down, and whichever linebacker covering him is probably, you know, in for some trouble. Right. Or even, you know, even a DB. So if I had to break it down that way, I'd go Chris, Rashad, CJ, what did I just say? JD, and then Mike Davis. But, you know, Mike Davis is going to get opportunities because he's so fast and, you know, he's so shifty and he can also catch out of the backfield. It's tough. But right now, if I had to go 3, 4, 5, I'd go CJ, JD, and then Mike Davis. That's a good group, John.
I know. And that's the thing that was so baffling because I know last year I kept saying, I mean, this is one of the deeper group of running backs in the league. And naturally, they performed horribly, except for Chris Carson and maybe Mike Davis. And it just didn't work out. CJ, of course, being injured. Then Carson gets injured. And I was with Alex Collins on Thursday night, and we were talking about it. And it's like, I mean, he was pretty much number five, and he gets cut. He goes to Baltimore, doesn't even have 16 starts, and he almost gains 1,000 yards. I contend that this year's group is a little bit more talented because basically what you have is Penny being, I think, better than Collins.
Yeah, and that's the other thing with how they're going to shape out this group in September. It wouldn't surprise me if someone who, you know, I think they could keep 5 running backs. I mean, I know you think they could probably use one as a fullback as well. But even if they go with 4, right, go with 4 and they keep a traditional fullback, Trey Madden, Khalid Hill, whoever that 5th guy is that gets cut, it wouldn't surprise me if he goes somewhere, you know, some team has an injury and he ends up being like Alex Collins, maybe not almost running for 1,000 yards. But like if JD or CJ or Mike Davis was to end up somewhere else after having a decent preseason, it wouldn't surprise me if they had a great year, right, because those guys are really, really talented. And with the injuries they've had the past couple of years, I mean, even in 2015, they were riddled with injuries. It wouldn't surprise me if they loaded up with 5 just because that way they actually have some depth where if guys just start dropping like they've done in years past, they're still all right. Like if Mike Davis is your 5th running back, your team's probably all right. You know, you probably got some decent backs. I think this group is more talented than last year's group because, like you said, Rashad Penny, I think, is probably better than what the Seahawks were going to get out of, you know, Thomas and Eddie last year, because it just nearly between injuries and just the how good the O-line was or how not good, I guess it just didn't fit, and neither one of them were exceptional pass catchers. So I think when you substitute those two for a Rashad and then a healthy CJ, which has always been his problem, yeah, you got a pretty good group. It's going to be hard to get on the field if all 5 guys are healthy. Yeah, it's going to be tough for some of those guys deeper on the depth chart to get on the field. You know, Chris and Rashad are pretty good.
Yeah. And finally, are you kind of reading that there's a question mark that they have about DJ Fluker? I mean, one day they put Jermaine Ifedi over at right guard. They signed J.R. Sweezy. They had him play first team right guard. I mean, I know Fluker right now is the starter at right guard, but you kind of get the feeling that they have some questions about him.
Yeah, I think he's just not healthy either. Yeah. You can just see the other day he walked past me, and one, those guys are huge. My goodness.
Yeah.
But, you know, two, he just had a little hobble. He still got the brace on the knee. So, yeah, they have to see what else they have there. I think also part of it is they like Isaiah Battle, too. Mm-hmm. You know, they're giving Isaiah Battle a decent amount of first-team reps at right tackle than with Jermaine sliding over to right guard. I think that's all playing into it. And, you know, if you can bring someone in like JR, you know, at a low cost to fight for it, I think that all plays into it. But I think part of it is Fluker's not giving them necessarily all of what they're doing because he can't right now. It really doesn't feel like he's 100%, but they also have that versatility with Jermaine to play multiple spots. And I really think Pete's want to get a good look at Battle there. So there's a lot going on. And I think, yeah, JR will get thrown right into it. I think they're supposed to do a mock game later today. You know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if JR is running with the first team, you know, or mm-hmm. or Jermaine as that right guard. Like, there's a lot going on at that guard position. They've had so much trouble there. You know, I wouldn't hand anyone the job either. You got to earn it. Like, they need someone to be good there and be consistent, and they haven't had that.
Michael Sean, what do we have on the Athletic this week?
Oh, lots and lots and lots of training camp coverage. But also, I'm really just doing day-to-day stuff. What I'm going to get into now, as I've had like a few weeks to fill some things out, is get into some more meat. I had a really good conversation with Jermaine Ifedi the other day, really candid conversation. Been really trying to get to know this new Legion of Boom. Haven't come up with a nickname for him yet. I'm taking suggestions with Bradley and Shaquille and Byron and I'm missing. Oh, and Tedrick. I've really been trying to get to know that group, and I think what I found out, I think the readers and just the fans and everyone will enjoy. So look out for that next week as well.
Okay, Michael Sean Duggar, thanks for joining us. I'll see you this week.
All right, thanks, John. See you later.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call. It's the John Clayton Show, 710-ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710-ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to David in South Prairie. Hey, David.
Hey, John. Getting ready for another heat wave?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, I am really excited about this year with the Seahawks. Even though they win only 7 or 8 games, it almost feels like 2011, 2012. We get to see if Pete Carroll and John Schneider actually catch lightning in a bottle 2 times. For the second time with these young kids. Mm-hmm. But I think you're going to see this year is we're going to see the effects, I think, for this team of the loss of high draft capital that we've had in the last 4 or 5 years. The, you know, basically the Percy Harvin trade, Jimmy Graham trade, Sheldon Richardson trade, and the Malik McDowell. You're looking basically at 3 firsts, a 2nd, and a 3rd that we've lost for players that aren't even here anymore. And I think because we had all those Pro Bowlers kind of making up for that loss, but now you've got all these young kids, and I think you might see some that there might be a little blowback from missing all those high draft choices. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, the big thing is, I mean, you know, you take the John Schneider's taking the tact. It's like, let's go for it. And, you know, again, some of the trades have worked. And I mean, just like Jerry DePota, he says it. It's like not every trade is going to work. And one of the things that both those guys do, Schneider and DePota, is that they try to work in volume because they realize, I mean, for example, yes, it did not work for Malik McDowell. But where would this team be if they not had traded down 3 times and picked up the 4 draft choices because, you know, they were able to get a Tedrick Thompson, a Chris Carson out of that mix, and Tedrick Thompson is really having a very good camp.
Yeah, I understand and, you know, that. I'm just saying, you know, those were trading down. These are players that we traded high draft picks for that are no longer on this team. And like I said, you only got like 6 or 7 games out of Percy Harvin, a couple years out of Jimmy Graham. You know, the Sheldon Richardson was basically a rent-a player for a second, and I think that's what's going to come back to hurt them. Is these, usually your 1st, 2nd, 3rd round picks? These are your cornerstone players, and you always had those Pro Bowlers, the Shermans, the Chancellors, the Bennetts, to kind of, you know, counteract that loss. But now, I mean, these are draft picks that you didn't get anything. Now they're gone. Players that you got, that you traded for, them are gone. And but now you don't have those Pro Bowlers, and now you've got these young kids. We get to, I think it might be, you know, the depth might be there a little bit. That's where it might kind of come
back.
Yeah,
I would agree that right now the depth is an issue, but I think the one thing is that I think these last two drafts can possibly come out better than people think because, again, it looks like they drafted for, you know, because they I know, like, for example, they had second-round grades on a lot of the guys that were drafted in the third round because I had, I think, four second-round grades on guys that they took in that, and now I think you're going to see Jaron Reed really start to come on. You saw Frank Clark. I mean, he's you know, now at the stage to get a big contract, and so it's you're right. It's just like 2011 where they you know they had a team that still won seven games with a quarterback in Tabaris Jackson that wasn't one that was going to have fourth quarter comebacks. Now,
right.
I think what you can see is that, you know, and that's why I keep on advising everybody to really study the seven guys back from last year that finished the season in the secondary, or not in the secondary, but on defense. Because, again, you know, their numbers were respectable and they played four playoff caliber teams with high pitched offenses. And they didn't, I mean, they had a horrible game against the Rams. They were not as good stopping the run, but I contend they're going to be a better run stopping group this year. So I think they're going to be respectable on defense. And again, that's where some of these young guys now have to step up, just like young guys like Richard Sherman and that stepped up in 2012.
Yeah, I think that's going to help a lot. I'm just looking at, you know, the thing with the Earl Thomas trade. If he does come mm-hmm. back, say in week 10, we don't trade him. What do you do with him? Do you let him play? Do you sit him? I mean, he's going to come back, you know, if we don't trade him. Right now, there's not a market for him right now. Obviously, nobody's coming to get him because they're all saying, well, I'm not going to sign this guy because there's no market for him. And he just wants to go to Dallas. And he's kind of like, it kind of reminds me of the Ken Griffey Jr. trade back then. Remember, you can trade me, but I only want to go to Cincinnati. That's the only team they want to go to. And it kind of hinders his trade value. So I think the only way they're going to trade him is if one really good team in preseason, one of their safeties goes down. You know, like you're seeing right now. You know, San Diego's a lot of these guys, top notch players are going down, and so that's the only way that we'll probably get something from him. I think you can just let him go and get the third round compensatory pick.
But also, that's why I think that the consideration would be is that if you can get a third round offer, then I think you consider it because then it's like you're getting your third round with a better than a compensatory pick because it's going to be higher up. And
right.
So if your third round pick in 2019 as opposed to 2020, hey, it's not the value of what you're giving up in Earl, but it's probably the best you can do and it's acceptable.
Right. But I was talking to Brock and Salk, and I was talking about the compensatory pick, and Salk goes, oh, that's just a, you know, they don't even use that if you sign a free agent. And I said, well, you get the pick, but you get a choice.
Yeah.
You can either, just like this year, they didn't use the pick because they signed free agents, but the year before, they kept all three. And in the third round, they got Shaq Griffin, they got Delano Hill, Nas Jones. Mm-hmm. This could be a big part of your defense.
Well, here's one to kind of contemplate, too. You know, with Fluker struggling, you know, with his ankle injury, knee injury, or whatever it is, you know, Dante Johnson just coming off the PUP with his knee injury, you know, you wonder, are they going to make the team? You know, Jaron Brown's going to make the team. What I'm wondering is that if you cut four of the eight guys that you, if you cut three, right, they have to get to four. They have to get to four, but then if you cut five of these guys, you know, you may... the unrestricted free agents, each guy that goes above the you may be able to start getting fourth round picks back.
That's what I'm saying. And I think the reason why they used them so much in that 2017 draft, because that draft was, you know, was absolutely loaded with defensive backs.
Right.
And we tried the free agent market with defensive backs. Remember Williams from Philadelphia and David Terrell, and it was a disaster. So I think Pete Carroll knew that the Legion of Boom was coming in and said, we got to restock this team, but let's do it with young kids and teach them.
Well, and that's what they do, and that's why, you know, it's been a little disappointing not seeing much coming from Delano Hill. But really, I mean, Tedrick Thompson is really starting to fly around and show that maybe there is something there. And
he's the next coming of Earl Thomas.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
I mean, you never know. You know, these guys might, you know, step up, and that's why I'm so excited. These guys, young kids saying, hey, it's my turn. I've been sitting behind these guys. I knew I wasn't going to get to play. Now it's my turn. I have to take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
Get a little bit more out.
So far they are. Now you can see guys stepping up. Hey, great call. Thank you, David. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Steph, stay on the line here. We're going to come back to you, and you're going to take more phone calls. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Steph in Bainbridge. Hey, Steph.
Hey, John. Thanks for hanging with me. I'm interested in listening to you as often as I can.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Everything you said, and you probably dealt with this issue in the past. But I'm wondering about the everybody wants to save face on the Earl Thomas thing. The Seahawks don't want to cave to somebody who's holding out, and Earl certainly is concerned about his security and his injury potential and what that might do for his career. I'm wondering whether the interplay of insurance in a situation like this, could the Seahawks, without damaging their cap, purchase a calamitous insurance policy for Earl? For example, if he gets injured in the season, he's of course going to be paid, but if it's a career-ending injury, and if he's concerned about that, could the Seahawks not buy him a calamitous insurance policy? Let's say for $10 million. Pick a number. But something mm-hmm. that would allow him to come back and both sides would save face.
I mean, you can do something like that. I mean, what the cost of the insurance policy would have to be put in there, and that would count against the cap, whatever the dollar amount that would be. Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, you can't avoid that. And so, that would have to go in there. But in the end, they were able to, they can't really do too much because you got to find out, does he really want to be here at all? I mean, he's the one that's put himself in a position by holding out. And remember, of the four holdouts, and there's only four in the league right now, he's the only one going for a third contract. And he deserves a third contract. He deserves $13-plus million a year. Don't begrudge that. But the problem is that this is a team that's trying to reset. It's resetting its personality. It's resetting its locker room. It's resetting the leadership group. And he's not here to lead. And if he doesn't believe this team can win, and we don't know that at all, then if he doesn't, then it's time to move on. And so they need to have him here for X number of weeks to see where he is before they can get him to a contract. Because if you give him the money and he doesn't really show the leadership that you want, and he doesn't believe in this stuff, and you saw some of that last year with, I guess, Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett, although, again, both of those guys led, but they didn't totally, I guess, believe, and that's why they're in part not here. I mean, you can't pay him until you can determine that, and you can't determine that until he comes in.
Yeah, and I don't know if the insurance works the other way. If the Seahawks were to agree to pay him, give him an extension, and he were to get injured, might they be able to be insured for that payment?
Not for the cap. No, they would get. There's no way that you can insure the cap relief of anything like that.
Yeah.
So you can have the policy to maybe cover him to a certain degree, but you're not going to get the cap benefits or anything like that. So
right. Well, good. Thank you. I knew you'd know the answer. It was a thought. I thought it was a decent way to incent Earl to come back. And of course, any kind of a policy like that, let's say it was for $10 million. It would only, of course, be enforced while he was with the Seahawks,
right?
And maybe there'd be a proration. If he were to leave, it would be traded. I suspect that if he is traded, he's going to run into the same problem that he's got with the Seahawks, unless he's able to find a team that is willing to meet his demands.
Mm-hmm. And again, he may want more than just 13, and that could be problematic because right now the top of the position pays 13. Hey, Steph, thank you for the phone call.
Excellent.
Let's go to Gordon in Rainier Valley. Hey, Gordon, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, John. I want to flip the script just for a second from the Mariners and the Seahawks talk, and make a comment about LeBron James, and then I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
And first, with LeBron James is done with this school, I promise, John, is one of the greatest things any athlete has ever done. You know, I have a list here of this thing, this school in Akron, Ohio, that just, he's building in conjunction with the Oklahoma, the Akron School District, and called I Promise. And at this school, John, they're going to have free tuition, free uniforms, free bicycle and helmet, free transportation within 2 miles, free breakfast, lunch, and snacks, free pantry for families, as well like a food bank, GED for job placement services for parents, guaranteed tuition at University of Akron for every student who graduates. This is just a wonderful, great thing that LeBron James is doing. And John, he has made it clear, especially in his interview that he did with CNN's Don Lemon, and he's made it clear in the past, among other athletes, that he's not a fan of Mr. Trump. And so mm-hmm. he goes on CNN, and, you know, because of Mr. Trump's comments about the NFL and Charlottesville and other subjects. So he does an interview with Nichols from NBC, The Jump, and they did one with Don Lemon. And in the interview, you know, he criticized Mr. Trump, you know, in the interview. So this morning, John, I don't know if you saw the tweet.
I saw
Mr.
it.
Mr. Trump goes on Twitter and says, LeBron James was just interviewed by the dumbest man on television, Don Lemon. He made LeBron look smart, which isn't easy to do. I like Mike. When he says Mike, he means Michael Jordan. So Don Lemon falls, goes back at Mr. Trump, saying, who's the real dummy? A man who puts kids in classrooms or one who puts kids in cages? Okay,
wow.
And which is a great fire back from
great
Don
line.
Lemon. Can you imagine, John, if President Obama made these comments that Mr. Trump has made? For Mr. Trump to go back at LeBron, he could have taken the high road and say the wonderful things that this I Promise school is doing. Instead, mm-hmm. Mr. Trump calls this guy a dummy, and Don Lemon, a dummy. John, this is just complete and utter outrage by Mr. Trump.
I agree 100%. And by the way, my wife Pat would back this up because I've said it many, many times. Don Lemon is one of my favorite anchors over at CNN. He's one of my favorites. I really like him a lot. And so I take that as an insult on him. And, you know, LeBron now has done two things that are so special for the area that he grew up, and he didn't have to do it. The school in Akron, 100%. I mean, that's incredible. I didn't know the details to that. That's remarkable what he did. The other thing that he did is for the starving, and I just was there in Cleveland, the starving fans mm-hmm. in the Cleveland area, he came back and he gave them the championship. That was so special.
Yeah.
He didn't have to do that. He could have made his run out to L.A. Four years ago or whatever it was. I mean, he could have done that then. But he came back and he gave back to the community. And that's why you don't see the insults coming from Cleveland that you saw when he left to go to Miami. Because, again, he handled it poor when he went to Miami. That was immature. Mm-hmm. LeBron James has turned out to be one of the most mature, old school type of athletes, and you know what you see right now. I say this not that I know anything, but I anticipate the way this. You're going to see him do even better things as time goes on, because now he's got the companies he's involved in. I mean, do you know his one company that sells pizza is like one of the best, fastest rising companies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's remarkable. And now he's going to have the L.A. platform to do a lot of different things. I think you're going to see even more. In fact, I don't know if you saw the story.
And, John, these NBA players, mm-hmm. boy, on Twitter, they are firing back big time at Mr. Trump. I know you got another call before you go. So, big shout-out to my friend, the Guaz. I know he just had his surgery and he's going home. So, Brian, if you're listening, go home, get well, and get back on the radio. Thanks,
okay.
John.
Hey, Gordon, thank you, and it's good seeing you this week. Last week, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing the show. Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Commando Dave.
Hey, what's up, John H.O.F. and Clayton?
Doing good. How are you?
All right, man. Great. Hey, right off the bat, let me say long live DeGraws and James Donaldson. And while I'm giving shout-outs, let me give one to Cloud9 in Kent, a Cougar-owned sports bar for all the WSU football fans and newest member of the Sports Bar Network. And you know John Clayton, the Sports Bar Network is vital for WeTheFans.com to keep the pedal to the metal for lobbying for the 2025 Super Bowl in Seattle a couple of years after Bellevue is connected via light rail. And Hall of Fame weekend is a great time to renew that commitment. And speaking of Hall of Fame weekend, John Clayton, for my money, this is the best Saturday to be on the John Clayton Show. The second best is the day before the Super Bowl. And I say second best because the show is later in the day, since you and all the other Hall of Fame voters are locked behind the door of a secret room, going back and forth, debating, discussing, arguing, and coming close to blows on voting for the next class of the Pro Football Hall of Fame to be announced later that evening. But today is the best Saturday to be on the John Clayton Show because it's the day that that class gets inducted with the ceremony that beats all ceremony and beaten up on the phone with not only a Hall of Fame voter, but a Hall of Fame writer. It's an absolute thrill no matter how many times I get the honor of speaking with you, John Clayton, throughout the year. Sorry to hear about the car mishap that prevented you from being in Canton, John Clayton, but from Houston, Texas, shout out to H-Town. I always like to get your take on the inductees that comprise the incoming class. And although he's making history as the only Hall of Fame inductee to not show up for the ceremony that wasn't dead, let's start with Terrell Owens.
Well, the big thing is he makes himself a Hall of Famer with an asterisk because, again, he's a Hall of Famer that doesn't go to Canton, can't see his bust, can't share with the other members of the Hall of Fame, and it's a completely immature, selfish act that he's doing. I think he's making let's put it this way. It's not just me. Everybody is telling him he's making the mistake of that because, and this is the thing that I think is so sad. There's more attention, if you can see on Twitter and everything else, about him than the class that he goes in with. I mean, he seems to show the pain of having to wait till his third year. And, what about the pain for like a John Lynch? What about the pain for a Kevin Mawai? What about the pain for a Steve Hutchinson that could have had the slot that he had? And he's slapping it back in the face because he's just bitter because I didn't get in first. Well, guess what? The reason you didn't get in as a first ballot was the immaturity and problems that you have right now. And you notice none of the five teams that, he played with, endorsed having any kind of party for him down in Canton. What does that say?
Randy Moss.
I think that was so great because, he's certainly one of the most talented deep threats and, certainly one of the one of the more fun guys in the league. I mean, he wasn't great with the media, but he was great as a deep threat. I still remember watching Dante Culpepper trying like crazy in practices in Mankato, trying to overthrow him, and he couldn't because Moss would just go up, jump, catch the ball.
Well, T.O. can trip about being a third ballot Hall of Famer. What about being a 45th ballot Hall of Famer and member of one of the legendary teams in NFL history? What about Jerry Kramer, John Clayton?
Yeah, it's long overdue, and it's one of those names that, if you talk to offensive linemen back there, they would say that he probably was a borderline Hall of Famer, and obviously he went to so long, but as a borderline. But if you're talking about the fans and the reaction, we always took criticism that he never got in. And so now I think we eliminated the criticism. I said this thing about Tio, and when I said it in the room, and I said, listen, I'm voting for him this year, I'm voting for him next year, and I'll continue to vote for him, but each year we don't have him in, we get criticized, rightfully so, as a group, and I think the same thing for Jerry Kramer. The fans believed in him, and now they get their man.
Odd to have three linebackers in the same class. Let's start with the best, Robert Brazil.
Well, I mean, he wasn't the best in my eyes. I still think I go for Ray Lewis one, and I go for Brian Urlacher too. But Brazil, I mean, because again, I covered so many of those Oilers-Steeler games, and he was just a fierce, smart, tough linebacker and deserves to get in. So I'm so happy that he's able to get in because, you know, with Curly Culp and that whole group, that was just a great group to follow.
Ray Lewis.
Ray Lewis, I mean, one of the most talented tacklers I've ever seen. I remember going to him once and saying, hey, why is it that there seems to be an explosion as you get close to tackling somebody? And what he told me is, well, you picked up on it. I used to be a wrestler. And as a wrestler, those are the things you try to do in a takedown. And it's like, and that's what I do when I get close to a running back.
Wow. Brian Urlacher.
Urlacher was just, kind of the different type because, again, I know he took criticism like some others, like Derek Johnson and that. Well, he didn't take on blocks. Well, your job as a linebacker is to make plays. And in a cover two defense like they had, in the middle linebacker position, he can get five interceptions, he can get five sacks, and he was a safety that became a linebacker and a great one.
And, of course, got to save the best player for the last. Only DB going in this year, Brian Dawkins.
Yeah, Brian Dawkins, I mean, overdue. We don't treat safeties as we probably should, but, I mean, he played for so long and played for so many good teams, and he was such a big hitter. I mean, you know, he may not have been the Legion of Boom type of guy as far as his height and that for Cam Chancellor, but he hit every bit as hard.
Lastly, John Clayton, I know you're up against it, Bobby Bethard.
Bobby Bethard, I mean, one of the great general managers. He did great things in getting a Charger team to the Super Bowl. He did so many good things with the Redskins. I mean, one of the best, and it's long overdue, but I'm glad he got in. Hey, Commando, thank you.
The 2018 class of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Safe travels, John Clayton.
Okay, thanks. We'll close it out with Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John, have a great show.
Thank you.
Good name for the Legion of Boom could be the House of Gloom. And then,
the House of Gloom?
Gloom, G-L-O-O-M. Have the Seahawks fans look it up. And then, question. I don't think Paxton or Kelly could be a second quarterback, but I can't see them releasing either one of them, trying to keep one for a little bit longer. What's your thoughts, John? Take care.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably stuck with him because it's a guaranteed contract, and a guaranteed contract's hard to get out of. And, you know, unfortunately, you're right. I mean, they're kind of in a tough spot at the backup quarterback position. That's why they have to completely rely on Case Keenum, because right now you can't count on Paxton. At some point, they got to see if they can trade him for like a 6th, 7th round pick. Hey, thanks, everybody. Now, I will not be doing a show Monday and Tuesday. I'll be in San Francisco doing stuff on 49er training camp. I'll be back on Wednesday, but of course I'll still be doing my regular hits on the other shows. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.